Today, the guitar seems omnipresent. We see its image on magazine and book covers, posters, T-shirts, company logos, record releases, and the screens of our televisions, computers, and handheld electronic devices. Turn on a radio, stream a song, walk through a market or mall, experience an ad with audio. Chances are you'll soon hear a guitar in the mix. Shaped and reshaped by amplification, effects devices, and other technological breakthroughs, the instrument has been transformed in ways that could scarcely have been imagined at the dawn of the 20th century. The National Association of Music Merchants Tracker of Sales and Trends recently confirmed that the guitar holds its place as, quote, the world's most popular instrument, end quote, by a long shot. For those of us lucky enough to have experienced this era of rock and roll firsthand, music served as a rallying point, a call for change, a salve, an opportunity to expand one's consciousness. Album releases were an event. Friends would eagerly gather around a turntable, unwrap a new platter by Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Neil Young, Led Zeppelin, the Allman Brothers, or another favorite, and marvel at the sounds blasting through the speakers. Whoa, man, did you hear that? Well, so opens Talking Guitar, Conversations with Musicians Who Shaped 20th Century American Music by Joss Obrecht. And for those of you who do remember those days of yore when getting a new platter, I always called them records, but what the heck, and opening it was an event in your life, whether you were with friends or just by yourself, this book is for you. And if you don't remember those days, there's still a lot of great information, fun, and excitement that awaits you in Talking Guitar. You know, I've reviewed a few music books in the last year, and guitar players have been a frequent focus of those books' subjects. The musical instrument that so many of us endeavored to play as kids, the musical background of so many of the tunes of our lives, the guitar has become, it is, as ubiquitous to us as the internet, as Mr. Obrecht relates to us as well in his introduction. So it's not surprising that today's featured title, Talking Guitar, has found not only a publisher for its widely respected author, but an audience for the book as well. Why? Well, Talking Guitar is chock full of the author's many years of interviews with rock and blues and jazz guitar standouts. The lightly edited, as the author tells us, transcriptions of the actual interviews from the past several decades give us as readers a real feel for these extraordinary musicians, taking us behind the scenes of what makes these musicians tick as people. And yes, as music makers. This is so much more than another fawning collection of fanzine biographies. In fact, if you're a fan of fanzines, you won't find a whole lot in here. Certainly, Obrecht only features the guitarists whom he feels he has really gotten some great interviews from. But it's not a fanzine kind of feel. It's a professional, let's have some fun with music we love kind of feel. We meet the talkative Nick Lucas, who when interviewed at nearly 80 years of age was still blowing his own horn and doing it well. We hear from the reticent Rick or Ricky Nelson, who answers the author's questions most often in short, direct sentences. And we learn from Eddie Van Halen, from Robeck Pop Staples, and from any number of other greats as well, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, Jerry Garcia, Johnny Winter, Greg Allman, Neil Young, Tom Petty, Eric Johnson, Ben Harper, they're all, and many, many more, truly many more, are in this delightful book. There is so much we can learn from each and from all of them, much about music history, and about music's deep influence on our culture. And some, too, we can learn about the many changes in American society that these rock musicians reflect as they discuss their careers over the many past decades. What was life like back in the 1920s, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and into this new century? Some of that definitely comes through in Talking Guitar. The question and answer style on display in every interview, because these are interviews in Talking Guitar, gives the book insight into these stage heroes and musicians as people and leavens the book's flow, too. From page one, the interviews reflect a well-versed interviewer and a comfort level with him on the part of the musicians that allows us to, in effect, sit in the room and listen as we read the back and the forth of the conversation. Surprisingly, for a book featuring rock music published in 2017, there is only one woman interviewed, the great Carol Kaye, who tells us, among other things, that she played on the Beach Boys' famous album, Good Vibrations. And yes, the interview is as in-depth and flowing as any of the interviews of the male guitarist featured here. Perhaps we await a more expansive collection of interviews with a Volume 2 of Talking Guitar. A Volume 2 would certainly be much appreciated. Now, I'll admit I don't know many of these musicians by their trademark sound. Responders to the author's interview earlier this year on radio station WBUR Boston go off in delight at the segment where a guitar riff was played and listeners were asked to name that guitarist. I do know most of the names of these folks, and I've certainly heard their music. And as a musician myself, and maybe you as well, I can appreciate their deep interest in and delight with musicality. And I think you will too, as a guitarist, a fan of rock, blues, jazz, or just an interested listener. As I mentioned, those interviewed for Talking Guitar span the decades. From the 1920s to the present day, who do we get to sit in on interviews with? Well, legends like the aforementioned Nick Lucas, a man who comes across as proud of his pioneering work in the 1920s, which saw him vaulting the guitar, as he is proud to tell us, to a national audience through popular public concerts in New York, Chicago, along the West Coast, and through the new entertainment media known as radio. Here's a little bit of that interview that Joss Obrecht has with Nick Lucas, telling us just a bit about those many years ago. Obrecht, do you remember what kind of guitar you used for those first recorded guitar solos? Nick Lucas, oh yes. The guitar I started on, which was called a Galliano, made in New York by the Galliano Company, was a small company located on Mulberry Street. I wasn't associated with Gibson until later, when I left New York. I went to join Ted Fiorito, who was an old friend of mine from Newark, and he had a band in Chicago called the Oriole Terrace Orchestra. He was at the Edgewater Beach Hotel there, and he sent for me. He asked me if I would be interested in coming out there, and he offered me $150 a week. And so my wife and daughter and I got in the car and drove out there. This was 1923. It took us about 4 days to get there because in those days they didn't have the route numbers. It was town to town, next town, next town. Of course, that was only day driving. I never drove at night because you'd get lost. You wouldn't know where the H to go. At that time, I still had my Galliano. And when I went to Chicago, naturally, we were a big hit there at the Edgewater Beach Hotel. We were booked for 2 weeks and we stayed there for almost 3 years. That was where I got my big break on radio. In those days, radio was the only media of entertainment. WBEH Chicago, that was the studio. In the interim, between sets, I used to go into the studio, which was right adjacent to our bandstand, and fill in some time with my guitar and sing and kind of croon. And that's when I started to get mail from all over the country. This wasn't a network by any means. It was just that they all had these crystal sets, and they would tune in and get me all through the night. I got loads of mail, and I started to become very, very popular. Obrecht, how did Gibson's Nick Lucas model guitar come about? The Gibson Instrument Company, which was located in Kalamazoo, approached me. That was in 1924. They wanted me to play their guitar, but I said, geez, I got a great instrument now. I'm very happy with it, and it sounds good. However, if you can make me a guitar to my specification, I'll be glad to make the change. I had no ties or contract with Galliano by any means because I bought it for $35. So Gibson said, we'll do anything to make you satisfied. At that time, the guitar was practically obsolete. It was going out. They had to do something. And by the same token, it was coming in. So they made a guitar for me called the Nick Lucas model. Well, it goes on and on like that. And it's a good sample of how some of those interviews went back and forth and back and forth. The guitarist getting lots and lots of time to speak, which, of course, kind of is the whole point of interview book, yes? In depth, in the box discussions with such folks as Roy Cooter, where the master musician and the rock journalist discuss the mysteries and wonders of early blues guitar masters such as Blind Willie Johnson, Lead Belly, Sleepy John Estes, and Lonnie Johnson. Much of the discussion between Obrecht and Cooter is beyond my civilian understanding of music, but we come across gems, as we do in all of these essays, all of these interviews, if you will, that all of us can appreciate, as when Roy Cooter tells Obrecht about the nature of the musicians that explain just about everything that we hear on records, that we hear on streams, that we hear on the radio. Anyway, here is Roy Cooter talking with Joss Obrecht. Well, the whole thing about guys like that was that you weren't ready for them as citizens of the world. You know, for middle-class white kids in Santa Monica, sad to say, you don't really know any people like that. Or Reverend Gary Davis. You just don't know what's going on. I had these records, although they weren't easy to get in those days, but people had given me tapes or some 78s I used to listen to these things and think, well, what could this be all about? Who are these people? What are they saying? It's a mysterious journey here, like an Alice in Wonderland. And then not understanding anything about the historical, social, economic conditions that produces music, there again being pretty young and all. All of a sudden, in the folk boom, on the scene in Hollywood, in this folk music club, there appear these guys. And they walk to the stage, walk through the audience. I was thunderstruck. I couldn't breathe because, you know, they got up on stage, sat down, and commenced to do whatever it was they were able to do. And of course, that really killed me because I thought, this is beyond my understanding. After a while, I began to gather up courage and go up and talk once in a while. You could sit down and say, can I understand this? Or can you show me this or that? It was hard for me, but I did. And then I found out it was good, because they didn't mind. They liked talking. It was not unpleasant for them. I didn't bother anybody or badger them like people do these days, but I was always curious and always trying to understand. Then it became obvious that it wasn't so much the music as it was the people. If you could figure out where the people were and how they were as beings, why then the music was very clarified. Because what's totally mysterious on record and inexplicable, why in 5 minutes of watching a guy play, you got it. You understand body rhythm and how the instrument is approached, which is entirely different than how I'd seen it done. It was not linear. It was not patterns. They'd play out of patterns. They don't play the horrible boom-chicka-boom, thumb-finger thing, you know. Everybody I knew did. That mad adherence to a mechanical thing that you set yourself up like a robot to play and think that's what it is. I don't know how that ever got started. Banjo, maybe? But these guys didn't play patterns. They didn't play tune. They were probably mostly out of tune. The whole thing was a revelation in what the instrument could really do in terms of personal expression. It's a great gift to have been able to see these people. Poor people today can't see anybody. Roy Cooter talking with Joss Obrecht. Now note, the book comes with a CD which features excerpts from some of the interviews the author transcribed for the book. And I found it interesting that Obrecht kind of apologizes for the quality of these interviews. I don't think there's anything to apologize for there. But let Obrecht tell us here as he's describing the 19 selections that he provides for us. The Talking Guitar CD presents audio excerpts from each interview featured in the book. Some of the original tapes are, in essence, field recordings made over the course of more than 3 decades. The sonic quality varies from track to track. The master tapes for these and many other Joss Obrecht interviews are part of the Southern Folklife Collection, housed in the Louis Round Wilson Special Collections Library at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And they go on to give you information about how to contact that library, either online or, of course, in person. I don't think he has anything to apologize. All of these interviews were done in person, some of them in studio and some of them over the phone. The sound quality certainly does vary, but it is fascinating to hear these rock musicians, these legendary musicians, talking with this very intelligent interviewer and getting across their thoughts, their ideas, just as if they were talking to a good friend. Let's conclude with the author's own words once again, where he's telling us a little bit more about the book and why he wrote it and why we just might be interested in it. Certainly a good summary, I think, of what we've just been talking about. As Obrecht tells us, Talking Guitar is not intended to be a complete history of the evolution of American guitars and guitarists during the 20th century. You'd need a much larger volume, several probably, to accomplish that feat. Instead, it's a celebration of the instrument, as seen through the words, lives, and artistry of some of the country's most beloved and noteworthy players. In these pages, you'll encounter accounts of the first guitarists on record, pioneering bluesmen, gospel greats, jazz innovators, country pickers, rockers and rebels, psychedelic shapeshifters, singers, songwriters, later-day guitar gods, and other movers and shakers. You learn from the artists themselves how they drew from inspirations, mastered their instruments, found their tones, crafted classic songs, and created enduring solos. Some interviews dig deeper still, reflecting on themes such as spirituality, the engenderment of creativity, and music as a healing force. Each conversation is unique. Naturally, combined, they cover a significant portion of the scope and sweep of American guitar in the 20th century. So if you're interested in reading and maybe even hearing a little bit from James Gurley, from Jerry Garcia, from Dwayne Allman, from Eric Johnson, from Joe Satterini, and from Ricky Nelson, give this book a listen as well, and certainly give this book a read. Talking Guitar, Conversations with Musicians Who Shaped 20th Century American Music by rock essayist Joss Obrecht. It's available at all of our fine local public libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.